This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkel, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Later on in today's show, we'll be looking at how some on the left have made incendiary comments in the days following the shooting of House Majority Whip Steve Scalise and others. Also, another federal judge has decided historic landmarks are unconstitutional, and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights is not very happy about the Trump administration's budget. But first, tensions in Russia are on the rise after the shooting down of a Syrian plane by the U.S., as well as a close-range encounter between a U.S. reconnaissance plane and a Russian fighter. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas joined Tony on Monday to talk about what's going on in the Middle East.
Congressman Poe, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to talk to you.
A busy weekend internationally, a lot going on. We were just talking with the general about what took place in Syria with the U.S. shooting down a Syrian a fighter plane. What's your take on that conflict, the threats between Russia cutting off the hotline between the United States and Russia in terms of protecting the airspace over there? What do you see happening?
I think that the United States made it clear the reason that they shot down the plane, that it had bombed near where coalition forces were on the ground tracking down ISIS. The Russians already track our aircraft in that small space over Syria. Well, we know who's in the air, and they know who is in the air at all times. They have that capability. We have that capability. So the idea that they're going to track our plane, they're already doing that. I do believe, as the general said, this is an embarrassment to the Russians because they're supposed to give cover for Assad's brutal regime of killing his own people. And they didn't obviously did not do that in this case. And I think they knew quite well what the United States was doing. But they have to save face, just like they had to try to save face with the cruise missile attack against the Russian base that was killing Syrians. You know, nothing happened over that except that the Russians said, we're gonna remember this and we're going to get even. But, you know, they haven't, and I don't believe anything is going to happen over this as well. So the Russians are just trying to save political face with Assad over this incident. However, it is a mess in Syria. You have Assad and the Russians, and then you have the coalition forces, and then we don't know who all these coalition people are. We're supposed to be over there not trying to overthrow Assad, but trying to get rid of ISIS. And then you have all the foreign countries that have also picked sides. So it's a very messy political and military situation on the ground and now in the air.
It almost looks like one of those barroom brawls. It's where everybody's
That's
throwing
right.
punches.
That's right. Just swing at somebody that's close to you.
It's what it appears, but there seems to be another element here, and I want to get your thoughts on this, that the world is still trying to figure out how to deal with America under the leadership of Donald Trump versus Barack Obama.
Well, you're exactly correct. We knew that Obama, President Obama, was not a leader. He was not a world leader. Not, I'm not sure he was a leader in the United States. But so the world knew that, and now people are trying to figure out, is Trump going to come and replace the leaderless America to a leader? And I think he is. I think he will act in the best interest of the United States when he has to, and this was another example of that. I don't think think the Russians are learning that as well, that he is a leader and a force to be reckoned with at appropriate times. I don't believe President Trump is reckless or will be reckless, but he will protect the national interest of the United States when he needs to do so, and that's what happened in this case.
You know, I agree with that assessment. I am not excited about everything I see in the Department of Defense, especially they've been very slow, and in fact, haven't done any of reversing of a lot of the social policy that the Obama administration foisted upon the military. But from a standpoint of using the military to defend our interest abroad, I think he's done it quite well. When required. And I don't think he's reckless, but I think he is intentional, and I think he sent the right, I think he has been sending the right messages.
And the Russians continue to bait us, if you will. They intercept our aircraft off both coasts. They constantly are buzzing our airplanes and buzzing our ships to see what we will do. And under Obama, we did nothing except almost apologize. And I think those days are over. The Russians are testing us like they have constantly done, always under Putin. And we're going to meet the test, and we're not going to give in to their harassment, if you will.
Yeah, I still kind of scratch my head while liberals in Washington still are looking for this connection between the Trump administration or the campaign and the Russians in terms of the election quote-unquote interference. But yet we see this strong conflict with this administration standing up to the Russians. It, quite frankly, doesn't add up to me.
Well, it doesn't add up. You know, I'm a former judge, and I hadn't seen any evidence in the last year of this so-called collusion between President Trump and the Russians in the election. And now even the Democrats are starting to say, yeah, we don't really have a case. So, but the left has, their agenda is not Russia. Their agenda is to delegitimize President Trump any way necessary.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to have you on the program. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, Tony. Thank you.
You can find out more about Congressman Poe when you head on over to TonyPerkins.com and click on the link. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question that you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Just days after House Majority Whip Steve Scalise was seriously wounded by a gunman who was hunting congressional Republicans, MSNBC host Joy-Ann Reid attacked Scalise about his conservative views while he lay in a hospital bed battling for his very life. Tim Graham, who is the director of media analysis at the Media Research Center, joined Tony on Monday to talk about the lack of decorum in the media.
Tim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
You know, Joy-Ann Reid cited his positions on Obamacare, marriage, all these things as extreme. What was your take on how she dealt with that?
We could understand that Joy Reid would disagree with the congressman's positions on the issues, but what was odd was that she's sitting there having a supposedly moral conversation with the Reverend Barber. And she says, well, as much as people want to root for him to survive, he does have these distasteful views. I mean, it really comes off like, well, do we really have to root for him? And do we really have to avoid the topic of his distasteful views? I mean, it really underlines a lack of civility.
Yeah, that was my take as well. I mean, the left, we find people's views, you know, I don't know, they're flawed, all right? I mean, when we have these ideological disagreements, we see their reason as flawed. But we don't see them as human beings being worthless. I mean, maybe their ideas are worthless, but we don't see them as worthless. But I can't say the same for the way they view this.
Well, part of it is a matter of rhetoric. So, for example, I would not sign a tweet or agree with the notion that the press is the enemy of the American people. I would absolutely endorse the idea that they are the opposition party to the Republicans, whichever president they have. That's just obvious, that's true, whether you look at their donation records or their media coverage. So it's a matter of, yes, what is the level of your rhetoric? What upsets me is that, yes, after a shooting like this, the news media will say, tisk, tisk, you know, we really have to watch the tone of our toxic discourse. And then they pretend that they're not guilty of any.
Yeah, what about, you know, taking it even further, CBS's Scott Pelley, you know, had the nerve to say this Scalise's gunshot wound may have been self-inflicted. I mean, insane.
He would say he was speaking metaphorically somehow, that because, you know, again, you don't, nobody was going to look back and say, let's go through Gabby Gifford's floor speeches on the House and see if anything in those floor speeches suggested she had it coming.
I mean, that's what they're saying, is that if you have these conservative views, then you are a target, as if that, you know, somehow these views justify this type of behavior. Again, we may see the ideas and the initiatives that the left puts forward as worthless, but we don't see them as human beings being worthless, because every individual is created in the image of God, therefore worthy of dignity. But it doesn't give every idea the same weight. But they go beyond the ideas and the ideology and the debate to go and to attack the individuals.
Well, I think the first reason, the first way that the liberal media in particular, the first problem they have is they want to deny that the conservative side has any idealism, that the conservative side, that the agenda there is to shut down democracy, pollute the air, and you know, everything on their agenda is anti-this, anti-this, anti-this.
Right, right, right,
the video, the adjectives they use.
Right.
And then just not just that, Tony, but they suggest that the other side has no intelligence.
Yeah.
That their arrogance that, you know, well, obviously Trump and these people have no brains whatsoever.
Tim, very quickly before we run out of time here, we also found out over the weekend further information coming out that the gunman who was killed in the attack had a hit list on him, all conservatives, friends of mine, conservative members of Congress, Freedom Caucus members. Does the left bear any responsibility for making them enemies of the public? I mean, the rhetoric that has been used, I mean, you've got groups like Southern Poverty Law Center that put out targets on people, Scalise they did a profile on. At what point does the left assume the responsibility that they have?
Well, the main problem here is their hyperbole, is that they have been so aggressive they wanted to blame the Gifford shooting on Sarah Palin. I don't think that two wrongs make a right. I don't think that I think a moral conservative says we blame the shooter first. We don't
right.
blame somebody who
right.
may have inspired the shooter. But again, right. they need to realize if this is their mode of argument, this slap happy, let's pretend that this we can blame violence on the Tea Party type stuff, they should at least have to say, whoops, well, I guess we were reckless.
Yeah, good luck. I don't think you're going to hear it from them. Tim Graham, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
You can find out more about Tim and the Media Research Center when you visit tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with us at @tperkins. Next up, a discussion about an Equal Opportunity Commission study. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
Every day, Americans put their trust in doctors who have sworn the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. We expect that the care they give us will honor this oath to the best of their ability. So why would a doctor participate in physician-assisted suicide? It directly contradicts this oath, leaving our people vulnerable to medical practices that lack safety and integrity. Congressman Brad Winstrup has led the charge to ensure safeguards are put in place that protect our nation's most vulnerable citizens. To learn more about this issue, go to frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. President and General Counsel of the Center for Equal Opportunity, Roger Clegg, joined Tony on Tuesday to weigh in on the 2-year probe of the Trump administration approved by the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights.
Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much.
So some of the headlines are a little deceptive about what's going on over here.
Absolutely. you know, for starters, this kind of report that is a report on the federal government and how it's doing with respect to civil rights enforcement is completely routine.
I mean, that's why they're supposed to do that by law.
They're supposed to do this. Right. That's right. And so the hype that the media is giving this is undeserved. And the calls for, you know, that this is being done because the Trump administration's budget on civil rights agencies is ensuring that the laws will not be enforced is simply not true. The budget is well in line with what it has been in the past. The proposals that have been made that the left doesn't like are simply, you know, moving one agency to another part or consolidating agencies to make them more efficient, things like that. The kind of screaming that's being done on so-called these drastic budget cuts in one instance, it's, you know, less than 1.6% of a very large budget in an agency where it was increased by much more than that just a few years ago. So there's nothing to it, and there's no evidence that the Trump administration is going to, you know, make it open season and allow racial discrimination. I will say that I hope that the Trump administration does make significant changes in the way that the civil rights laws are enforced. You know, I hope that they will not favor racial preferences the way the Obama administration did, so-called affirmative action. I hope that they will not require racial balancing in a way that's inefficient and unfair and irrational the way the Obama administration did. And I hope that they interpret the laws as they are written. For example, when Title IX says that you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, I hope that that's not interpreted to mean sexual orientation or gender identity, because that's not what the statute says. Mm-hmm. I hope the Trump administration will change all that. And I'll tell you something else, Tony. I think that the time has come to, if any civil rights agency is going to be gotten rid of, it should be the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights itself. This is an agency that was created decades ago when there was a need for it, because there weren't all these other civil rights agencies in the federal government. But now its work is completely duplicative of a lot of other work that's done. It's not needed. It's a waste of money, and it's become sort of a partisan creature that does no real good for anyone.
Well, Roger, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm just going to give you my perception. And there's a couple of things here. One is that the Civil Rights Commission, generally conservatives don't care that much about being on a commission like that, because its mission is often delving into liberal ideas and such. And so it is often dominated by liberals. What I see in this particular case is the commission, as you said, by law must report. I mean, this is what they do. But it appears that they are saying things, a little bit of commentary with the announcement of the investigation they're going to do, or the analysis, a little commentary they add to it to give the media something to say, feeding that media narrative, which is trying to, in my view, derail the Trump administration.
Well, I certainly agree with the second part of what you said. With respect to whether there are conservatives on the commission, it's sort of... It's interesting the way that it's made up. Right now, there are only two conservatives on it, Pete Kersenow and Gail Heriot, who are fantastic.
I've had Peter on the program before, so I know he's conservative.
Isn't he great?
He is good. I know there's conservatives, but conservatives don't pay as much attention to these issues as liberals do.
That is certainly true. And, of course, the reason that the commission now is stacked 6-2 is because four of the commissioners are appointed by the president, you know, to these staggered terms, so that if you've had a two-term president like President Obama, you know, those four are going to be liberals. And the other four, two are appointed by Democrats in Congress and two are appointed by Republicans in Congress. So, you know, that's where the 6-2 comes from.
Mm.
So you're right that what it's doing now is ridiculous. And it's certainly true that it's not just that I think conservatives are, you know, don't pay attention to these issues, but I think a lot of times they are afraid to speak out on them because they're afraid when the left plays the race card.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I do think that is true. Roger, we're out of time, up against a break, but I'm going to get you back on to talk more about this and kind of explain how all this works to our folks. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Roger Clegg and the Center for Equal Opportunity when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider giving a gift to Family Research Council to help us reach more people with the truth? Up next, another federal judge attempts to ignore history. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
With a Republican president in office, we should be confident that our religious liberties are secure, right? Well, think again. As violations of religious liberty continue to occur in our military, FRC recognized the need for an updated compilation of these cases. Learn more about how our men and women in uniform are encountering difficulty in expressing their faith. Go to frc.org/danger for real stories of how our military service members are fighting for the very rights that thousands of their predecessors fought and died for on the battlefield.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. A U.S. District Court judge recently ruled that a giant Christian cross on city property in Pensacola, Florida, is unconstitutional. Fox News' Todd Starnes joined Tony to talk about the judge's ruling on Tuesday.
Todd, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Great to be with you.
Well, you know, this fits right in line with, you know, what you've been writing about, the Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again. I mean, the attack on the other side on our values and freedoms has not stopped.
No, it has not. As a matter of fact, I suspect we can make an argument it's actually gotten worse. And there are a couple of lessons for us to learn in this story from Pensacola. First, it's important to understand once again that lower court judges matter. Judge Roger Vinson, the federal judge in this case, was appointed to the bench not by Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, but by Ronald Reagan. So that's why it's so important for us to pay attention to who the presidents nominate to these lower courts, because we end up getting these absurd rulings. And what I find interesting here, Tony, is that Judge Vinson, and I was reading his conclusion, it seems to me that the judge is sympathetic with the city here in this case,
Yeah. And
even wrote so much in his ruling that the historical record indicates the Founding Fathers did not intend for the Establishment Clause to ban crosses from public property. So my question is, if in fact that is correct, then why in the world did he rule the way he ruled?
I came to the same conclusion, because this judge does not appear to be a liberal. He actually appears to be a conservative. But what he said, in fact, you made a point, he made reference to the historical record, which indicates that the founders did not intend for the Establishment Clause to ban crosses and religious symbols from public property. But he goes on to talk about a case in Georgia, I believe that's where it was, where...
That's right, Raven County.
And he said because the judge there ruled that the cross had to come down, he was bound by the same decision. Now, if a decision is wrong, I have a hard time understanding why you got to be bound by it.
Tony, I do too. And the judge wrote this as if he was hoping, almost begging, that it be appealed. And he wrote in the final paragraph of his conclusion that he hoped that it would be appealed. But again, I think this goes back to this idea that the secular humanist and the atheist are waging an all-out assault on the Christian faith, and they're doing whatever they can to remove any Christian symbol from the public view. And that seems to be the case here. The city of Pensacola now has 30 days to remove that cross. He also awarded the four atheists who filed the lawsuit damages in the amount of $1. That amounts to a quarter apiece, Tony.
Well, maybe they can make a phone call then. What is the city going to do? Are they going to appeal the decision?
Not sure yet. I hope they do. You know, typically cities will use organizations like First Liberty Institute or Alliance Defending Freedom. In this case, they used, I believe, a local law firm. So I'm not quite sure what their plan of action is. I hope they do appeal it, but again, it's absurd because again, this the judge was basing his decision on really questionable grounds. But we'll see what happens here. But it's one of those cases where people need to pay attention, because sooner or later we're going to have to ask some very pointed questions. For example, are they going? Is California going to have to rename Los Angeles and San Francisco, or are they going to have to chisel the Ten Commandments off the front doors of the Supreme Court building?
Don't give them any ideas. I mean, there are some that want to do it. I mean, you've had Michael Newdow, I think he filed suit to have In God We Trust taken off the money. These guys will not stop. They are relentless, and if they can think of it, I mean, they are going to try to do it.
And honestly, Tony, an atheist in good standing would not be caught dead with American currency in their pocket. So,
well, I'll take it.
Here's a quarter.
Or they could use it. They could use it to buy The Deplorables' Guide to Making America Great Again. That way, they won't have to carry it around.
Maybe a few more quarters, but that would be great.
All right, Todd Starnes, always great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony.
If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.